Oh, here it is, okay.
Attachment of today's sheet is to proof the guys that what happened in the medieval period can become contemporary.
Okay. Here we are. Most of us here, when we are undergraduates at Yeshiva College, and then we go on, you know, we think that it's a domain of halacha and a domain of science, and somehow we work it out by not really having the two crash at each other. It'll give us tension headaches. It won't be good. So, you know, we do our thing in the Beis Medrash, and then we do our thing as undergraduates. You take a course in the afternoon, and, you know, you hear things, okay, now it's a Slifkin affair, there's some problems, evolution, this, that. We try not to think about it. We just learn and go weiter. But how have I should it be that easy? And a lot of times, there are periods where you're forced to confront the clash. Why is that? Because it's not just that there's a domain of halacha and a domain of science, but many halachas are based upon presumptions with respect to science. And then when, at certain eras, these scientific assumptions get challenged, and the person who knows the halacha seems to see that halacha is based upon these scientific presumptions, and you have a problem, and you have to somehow work it out. What I like to do is take one case, go through Mar Makomos of that case, focus upon a crisis which took place in the beginning of the 18th century after one of the results of the scientific revolution in the 17th century had already been absorbed and was being known by Jewish authorities, see how they dealt with it, then make a few, and that will be the preponderant time the show will be spent upon that. They'll make a few comments upon what is known as the Slifkin affair to see whether this case is similar, whether it's different, and then I certainly would be pleased to take any questions, any comments, any orientation you have on these issues. The case, of course, I'm going to discuss is, as you may know, spontaneous generation. So I call the Shir Halacha and the Scientific Revolution, Analysis of Spontaneous Generation. Now, let's just go through, slowly but surely, different Mar Makomos on the topic. Okay, let's start with the Mishnah in Kulin, 9th Perek. I even have an English translation here. This talks about a mouse, which is half mouse and half earth. So it's Perek Tes, Mishnah Vav. If a man touched the flesh in a mouse that is half flesh and half earth, he becomes unclean. But if he touched the earth, he remains clean. That makes sense, given the premise of the situation, that obviously only Bali Chayim have, Tum of Shratim, so only the half of this creature that is Chai becomes Tamei, not the other half, which is made out of Adama. Now, Rabbi Huda says, also if he touched the earth that is over against the flesh, also becomes unclean. Okay, now let's look at the next page, the Mishnah. Sheretz. Shechetzi abasa chetzi v'adama. Hanogei abasa tamei v'adama tahor. Rav Kiva mer hanogei abadama shekneged abasa tamei. Okay, there's a different gist here, Rabbi Kiva, as opposed to Rabbi Yehuda. We will not get into that. Let's look at the Rambam. Rambam Pesh Mishnayis, third line. V'histavus ha'achbar dafka min afbar. In other words, what's going on here? It sounds crazy. This seems to be saying that a mouse, a live being, is emerging not from parents that are also mice, but from the earth. I'm very careful here. This is a, you know, one wants to say urban myth, but he actually says more than that. It's very well known. The ain misbar the rabbim shar omruli shiro also. There is no limit to the amount of people that told me that such a creature exists. Umetzios balchai kozehu davar machlish ein ladaslo hezber klal. So the Rambam here is, on the one hand, displaying, you know, a certain healthy skepticism that, you know, there's no rational understanding for such a creature. How could you have a creature that's half mice and half earth? Page 2 of the Maamar Chumash. But he says, on the other hand, many people told me it's so. And the Rambam, for example, in Morning Buchim, when he talks about cures, he says, look, even though really anything that cures has to be based upon sound theoretical foundations, but certain cures that seem to make no sense work. Okay, now let's look at the Rav, the Bar Tanura, and Tosfos Yontif. Now, obviously, this Mishnah assumes spontaneous generation. Right? That's what's happening. It's coming from the ground. It's not coming from the parent of the same species. Okay, underline the Rav, page 3. Achbar shechetzi abasa v'chetzi v'adama. So, Batsmur tells us, Yeshvin achbar sh'enu parah v'rava ela me'atzmo notzar mino adama. And he gives, like, another example. Ke'ashbraham Misharetzes tolayim, flies just come from the garbage. Okay, that's also the assumption, times Chazal, that it's not that there are the flies hatch tiny, tiny eggs there that we just don't see, and from those eggs come other flies. No. Rather, spontaneous generation, from the garbage emerges flies. So then, the Shaila is, based upon the characteristic of Chazal, to understand Dinim, you always take borderline cases, right? So many halachas about Isha, so what are the Mishnah Kurim? They talk about androgynous, the Tuntum, right? Or Koy, Chas Eber Chas Ben Chor. That's a standard operating procedure in Chazal. You try to define a case by looking at the limits. So here also, well, you have an Achbar that has too much sheres, obviously earth does, and what about a half and half creature? So that's the discussion. And Rabbi Huda, he did Rabbi Huda again, said of Rabbi Kiva, says it's both Tame anyway. Now, Tosfos Yontif has something very interesting here. You know, Bizman HaZeh, in the year 2005, so the main debate from Jews have with, let's say, certain members of the scientific community is there some notion of, like, you know, random evolution without any God at all, or is there a God involved? But even, let's say, the astrophysicists that, you know, say the idea of a Big Bang, that means there was a time X where there was a Big Bang, but there was X minus one, there wasn't. However, in the time of the Rishonim, the Islamic Aristotelian world that adopted the main notion of the Aristotle, there the idea was that the world is eternal. Okay, so it's a little different. So we, who argue with them, say, no, there was a Bria Yesh Me'ayim. So Tosfos Yontif says something interesting. The idea of spontaneous generation is a proof to the notion of Bria Yesh Me'ayim. Let's look at Tosfos Yontif. Achva Shechetzio Bozo Chetzio Adama. Okay, in Kosef Harav, Yesh Min Achlo Shein Apar Varav, etc. Lashon HaRambam, I quote Rambam page Shnayas in Chulin, for Inyan Mepursa Ma'or, Vein Mitzvah L'Rov, Magidim Lishrael Zeh, Ava Pish, Mesiyas Balchai, Kazeh Dov Matzviyev, L'Avil Atayin, Shum Panim Atkan. Now, Tos Yontif adds himself, V'zeh L'dati Tana Gadola Al Ma'amine HaKadmus. Okay, now, let's make sure not to fall into a fatal logical flaw. We certainly can believe that there is a God who created the world, Yesh Me'ayin, without necessarily believing in spontaneous generation. Right? Just rather what the Tosfos Yontif, assuming spontaneous generation, Tosfos Yontif living in the middle of the 17th century, and a fellow named Joseph Davis, who got a doctorate from Harvard and wrote a wonderful book on the Tosfos Yontif, ends his book by saying, Tosfos Yontif was the last medieval Jew. So, see that here a little bit also. So, Zela Didi Taina Gadola Mamini HaKadmus, that you say that just like God can create, you know how God can create a world out of nothing? He can create, he can cause a mouse to be created out of dust. Now let's look at the Tiferes Yisrael. Tiferes Yisrael already is living in the middle of the 19th century. Let's look at Beis, Yochanan of Boaz. V'tosef Yontif kosef kazeh, v'zeh tango negma mini akadmus. L'chora tamua, wait a minute. Bria yesh v'ayin, ex nihilo means just that. God, there was absolute nothingness, and God created something out of nothing. Here, you're not really creating something out of nothing. You have earth, right? Let's say the medieval classification of Domeim, Tomeach, Chai, Medaber. Right? So Domeim would be like the four elements. Tomeach is the plants, Chai is animals, Medaber is human beings. So it's still Yesh Meyesh. So Yehoche, Yesh Meyeshu, Mater Raila, Mini Achachila. Sho Omrim, that's like a Kan, Sho Omrim, Kol Niver Yesh Meyayin. Avanirle, Dirot Lomar, Zahare. Okay, then he says, do I have it here? Yeah. It's still good proof because there's no life. The point is that life is coming from something which is not living. That's what God did when he takes the psukim in Bereshit there literally, that he formed plant life, at least chaya, or animal life, from the aretz. So it's a recreation of what was done in Maaseh Bereishis. Umamini akadmus shekovrim b'Torah omrim shekach chayu lolamim chay moli chay. Look at this. He's saying that spontaneous generation, the people that deny spontaneous generation, are the Aristotelians. So this is a good logical move. He's saying, like Tosfos Yontif, it's one or the other. If you deny creation, you say things the way they always were, always will be. So you always had chai molid chai. Then he says, look, olam ein lo v'yirai mikol beitza shef rochmol midomeim. This is very important. Da'atam hach dom gufe yotza mi'chai. Okay. Now the Tosfos Yontif goes to a contemporary evaluation of the issue. V'ani shamati apikorsim malagugin al bria zushin skeris kanu b'sanhedrin. How could he talk about an animal which is half animal and half earth? Machishev omer she'enu b'mtzius klal. V'chein ra'iti l'hazkir kan ma'ashe matzasi kasuv. That's what mem kav stands for. Not mechasa kavod here. Matzasi kasuv v'sefer ashkenazi shechiber chacham echem mefursim chacham umos l'shmo link. Sifro Nikro Urvelt, ancient world. She nimsa beri kazos beres Mitzrayim, machos at Tebes, the Nikra Akwa Hublosha Mitzrayim, whatever, Yaklos, and spring mouse. The mouse that just springs from the ground. She achele shafanea rosh, machosel yodea, mikurim yafer, bachorea adayim gulamim rigve aris. Not quite the way the Bartanura had. Bartanura has the left side, one side, right side, the left side. Here, it's more, you know, anterior, posterior. The front already is emerging from the soil. The front part is living and the back part is not. Adachar Ez Yamim Mesapech Kulo LeBasar V'Amar Merabu Masech Hashem. Okay, so we'll have later, Dr. Schneer Lyman traced the book that Peretz Yisrael quotes, and unfortunately, not only is not it a raya, but it's a raya faker. We'll get to that. Now let's just look at the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Okay, so alluded us to the fact the second Gemara like that. Gemara talks about Tchiyat HaMeitim. Different rayas for Tchiyat HaMeitim. It's the end of the thin line. Says, let's start from here. Four lines and the lines. Ima tamaminli say lebikore achbar shayom chetziyav basar vchetziyav adama lemachar hishvitz menase kulo basar. Okay, then you look at Rashi. Achbar deish minon she'ein yivron alidei tolada. In other words, some mice are propagated from a father mice and a mother mice, but the others are not. Hayom masil. Maybe lihibore. Trina hayde. Lo tseif mina afar lamachar mahalek shu nivrak v'min meshkidat chulin ba'or barotav. That's where we started with. So it does seem to be the assumption of not just the Mishnah Chulin, but the Gemara Sanhedrin that such a creature exists. Okay. Now, the problem is, of course, those that accept what has been really, as we'll see, since 1688, when Francesco Redi published his book proving that there is no such thing as spontaneous generation. And he had a great, very easy experiment. Let's talk about the flies. Whenever he took this real rotting meat, so whenever you have rotting meat, then the flies are going to come. So he put a very tight gauze pad all around the meat. So what happened? Then he was able to see how the flies hatched tiny little eggs on top of the gauze pan. Okay, so in other words, it only appears to the naked eye that there is something called spontaneous generation. But all his experiments showed that really, if you get a not hazard-free environment, but an environment that, you know, you're able to really see what's going on, you know, with good controls, you will always see the tiny eggs that are being deposited there, then hatch the flies. We'll get to the mouse case in a minute. Now, first let's look at the Rambam in Mishnah Torah. So the Rambam quotes this Mishnah in Hilchos Avos HaTumos. That's page 6 and 7 of Maamar Makomos. Sher shechetzi pasu chetzi v'adama nagei basar the basar tamei uvadama tahar. From hishus of nekula nagei v'adama shel unikus vaso tamei. Now, okay, let's turn to the second page. I have it here. Yeah, even on the first page, this is Rav Kapach's edition of the Rambam. Look at Os Yud. Now remember we saw that lashon in the Rambam. Yes, so many people told me it's true. You know, that's not quite the lashon. I was absolutely convinced. So, right after Adkan lashon of the Rambam, Rav Kapach continues, "Vani mevin kiris the asol shel Rabbeinu mimetzius gezul." Rambam really was uncomfortable with really accepting the reality of such a organism, right? Why? Because like he says in Peshu Shais and Avos, after Maaseh Bereishis, there is no more new type of creature. So that's it. Now, this is very interesting. The Rav Kapach is saying, the issue isn't one of these questions, could God do something? Let's grant that God could do something, that if God chose, he could create a creature that is half mouth and half earth. The question is, does this happen in this universe of ours? Right? In other words, it's like the Havdalah, like some of the Gaon talk about, you know, the ordained power of God as opposed to the absolute power of God. In other words, absolute power of God, maybe God could do everything, but Lemaisa, that doesn't happen in this universe. So That's what he says. Klomar she'achar sheishes mei breishes ein od chidush. The hachadshos al derech hanefa mofes were actually given all the way in sheishes mei breishes. So in other words, therefore, there seems to be no place for such an organism in this universe. But then, again, there's a place where Rav Kapach said, even try to check out, he said he lived in Yemen. So again, Yemen was a place where the Amcha there were not very scientifically trained. They were willing to accept the creature. So there's a line where Kapach says, you know, I tried to check it out, didn't find anything. So second. Yeah. What?
Second page.
Second. Yeah. It's okay. In any event, but he already says, he already gave him his position clear that Rav Kapach believes. Now the Rambam quoted it because it's a theoretical question. If Lu Yitzuri, there would be a case of a mice that is half, or a creature that's half mouse and half earth. So which side is tummy? So the side that tummy is tummy. That's the other side is not. But that does not mean at all that the Rambam actually believes that such a thing exists in reality. Okay, and there's another possible reading of the Rambam in which maybe it's not as strong as Rav Kapach, that maybe the Rambam is just skeptical. You know, maybe there is. I don't understand what it is. You know, that would be a slightly weaker version of how to go on. Anyway, just to give some other makoros, even my makoros Ad Hayom Hazeh, quote this. Achbar, you have Rav Ruya Magoliath, Magoliath Yom Sanhedrin, quotes it, and he quotes the Tiferes Yisrael. Then you also have Rav Mendel Tashem, Torah Shlema. He discusses by the Bria of Leviathan and other creatures. Then you have in, just for example, Encyclopedia Hilchatit Refuit. So he quotes it, interestingly. So this he quotes it under the category what's called Hishtana Hatvayim. Now this we'll discuss a little later in the Shir. One move that people make when you see, let's say the Gemara will talk about a huge eggs that are, you know, 60 parsos wide, whatever, the Gemara in Lesek B'choros has all these creatures and all these items in nature that just don't exist today. So how can we not see them today? So one of the answers is Hishtana Hatavayim. So that's a very interesting move. That's a move which says you're able to say that the Gemara is actually reporting a fact, not just what people thought, but a fact. Why doesn't it occur today? Because the definite, you know, nature changed. I happen to think that the Rambam, you really don't really have such a thing, generally, of Hishtana Tzvayim, and that's Rambam Shitasto, as Rav Kapach says, that certainly after God created the world, Olam Kimin Hago Noeg, and it goes the way it goes for all generations. Anyway, so we don't really have to read all that. Let's move to in Hilchos Shabbos. There is where Rav Kapach will discuss his attempt to really see whether there are creatures born out of spontaneous generation. Yeah?
I just have a very hard time with Kapach's proof on Rambam, because can't Hashem easily have created a world where spontaneous generation would?
Okay, well, you know, you're right. No, it's again, theoretically, it is possible. The question is, you know, the Rambam makes a claim, it's a famous Mishnah in Maseches Avos, where, again, that this Rambam is disputed, other people, you know, dispute that, but the Rambam's interpretation of the Mishnah that talks about the 10 things created, like Ben Hashmoshos, right after the 6 days of creation, that all miracles were, so to speak, plugged into nature at the creation. So in other words, The teva of water is to flow downward. So, but God plugged in the creation that when the Jews leave Mitzrayim, there's going to be a temporary suspension of that rule. That's the nes. And that's why the Rambam writes, he says there's also more nebuchad, that all nisim are by definition only temporary. That's why, for example, Kriyas Yamsuf, so the water, instead of going, you know, flowing downwards, went up like a wall. That was a temporary aberration, then Yeshuv HaMayim, Leisano, went back to its normal course of events. So all that was plugged in. So then he also said that the nature of procreation is going to be each species from its parent species. Okay, so you have to add that, right. So, by the way, the advocates of spontaneous generation don't say, oh, it just happened once in history, but it's always happening. As we will see, there are books written in the past 10, 20 years that, from Hilchos Shabbos that assume spontaneous generation. So we'll have to see that. Anyway, so the Rambam actually depicts his attempt to find it. It's going on the Rambam, Perket Aleph Hilchos Shabbos, about these little fleas. So the Rambam makes quotes a distinction in Hilchos Shabbos. Those fleas, Issur Melacha on Shabbos, and Kabbalas Chazal that we divide into 39 categories. One of these categories is Netilas Neshama. Netilas Neshama means the ending of life of any Baal Chai. So, this raises the issue that a creature which is created through spontaneous generation, there's no issur in Tilas Neshama. There's still no issur d'oraisa. Now we can discuss what is Asur b'drabanan, and then Makom Hesin Meruba, and then Makom Sar Gadol, Makom Mitzvah Mutar. Maybe it's Bechlal Mutar Lagamrei. So look at this Rambam, Hilchos Shabbos, Perek Aleph, Halacha Beis, page 12 in the Marim Makomos. Mashem Shein Torim V'Rabim Yizach in the Keva. Oh, Nehavim Mina Afar Kemo Hapir Ocean. And certain types of creatures. Again, you see how he's doing it. Now, whatever you hold that the Rambam held about the Akbar, at least with the fleas, I don't know, he seems to have a more, page 12, seems to have a more tolerant view that maybe this actually happens, which would not be unusual because that was the scientific consensus until Halpacha, until 1688. Oh, now, mean Paroshin, Harorikos and Chayev, So apparently, from dung, or mina perosh, ishu, from these rotten fruits, from taloim shel basar, that's the meat case, the taloim shel basar hakitniot, hahorgon potter. Why? This is the Hilchos Shama. Evidently, now again, there's a side problem in the Rambam here. Why? The Mishnah Berurah talks about Be'er Halacha, why he's machmer by pir oshim, right, from the dust. If you want, you know, just theoretically, someone can say, maybe what you think was came from the dust really also comes from a father and mother, but not from the Ramashim that clearly come from the Galalim or from the Paris. He doesn't say that. That's just a theoretical possibility. In any event, it's clear from the Rambam that L'chol Pachos, the case of the Glolim and the Peros, is, and it's an not only an acceptance of halachic spontaneous generation, it's acceptance of the halachic ramifications thereof. And it's not a chumrah, it's a kula. Okay, now if you look here on Kappa, here it is. On Hilchos Shabbos, the top column, on page 13. Many people would say, after it rains, of course, after it rains, then you have moisture and the air and everything, and the meat gets putrid. That's when you see a lot of these fleas. The rain roin also mitzaras lasos achoya geshem. Now look at this. He gives you his own biographical comment. Ulitzarech kach bilisi harbe yamim. It spent a lot of time, many days, K'dei limso ber yizu. Okay? Omnom hayum istovin besodos achborim hanirim kach. There were a lot of mice that seem to be these types of mice. V'kasher tofakti yom yimehem lo ma'at misbar ki rak chetziav ha'achorim luchlach betit. No! It's not that it was half mice and half dirt. But these are very dirty, swampy, you know, disgusting areas. So it looked like the bottom half was dirt. It was not dirt. It was a mouse covered with dirt. Okay, so Rav Kapach, you know, says it's probably not true. V'nishar k'divrei Rabbeinu agodah bilvad. Then look what he says. Chol tivri azuologia, ivrim arvayim. He said he looked both, again, grew up in the beginning of the 20th century of Kapach, both Jewish and Arab zoology books. Shanabem yodusai lomas shum zech zius kazu. Now, therefore, he says we should be machmir. Ksara shol dava yesh li zor mil harog b'shabes shum rachash. Leval nifka b'isr Torah. Okay. That's Rav Kapach. Rav Kapach was known as a, you know, he called it as he saw it, independent thinker. And now, let's take a little detour. Yeah?
We mentioned before about the Shino Hatzev as one of the answers.
Right? Yeah, Rav Kapach was not buying that.
Correct. Yeah. But I think that some of the other answers I've heard that might, I mean, since what Rav Kapach just said, that when the Chachamim in the time of the Chazal, yeah, whatever, wrote about the light that comes from nothing, or that, I mean, it could be interpreted as meaning that it appears to come from nothing. It appears to come out of the dirt. Like Rav Kapach said here, that the bottom end was just dirty. It wasn't really that
right.
Mud.
So do you feel, okay, so right.
If somebody touches the mud on the back of a mouse, he's not tummy. If he touches the mouse itself, he's tummy.
Okay, right, so then you have to decide whether you think that is pshat. In other words, like the first...
It doesn't appear to be pshat.
Right. So, well, okay, so right, so we have to decide. So okay, that's a very important question. On the one hand, you know, we have to treat all the words of Chazal the utmost respect and love and adoration. But Lemaisa, you know, can you say that? One can say that, but, you know, again, your heart of heart... What do you think of the pshat? The thing from Tchiyas HaMeitzim, where in Sanhedrin, doesn't fit that way.
Right?
So I think I've demonstrated evidence that the Gemara took it literally. Where in Sanhedrin, right? So given the Gemara, Sanhedrin says it this way, there's no reason to say that the Gemara in Chulin wasn't that way. And Rashi certainly learned it that way. And all the Bali Tosfos learned it that way. You know, and again, even the Rambam, he didn't quite say it's not true. He says, you know, it's hard to understand. You know, it's not quite...
But even during that time, though, people were believing
it. Yeah, of course. And he also did. He did. I prove it with the parosh. He says you're allowed to kill, right? So in other words,
just bringing the dinos into Gemara by saying that you're allowed to kill the
life. Okay, no, but I understand. But if you don't believe in spontaneous generation, how are you allowed to do it?
If the Gemara says the dinos.
But again, yeah. I'm pushing you because I wanted to see the issue. In other words, if there are 39 of us melachos, one of them is in Tfilas Neshama. Tfilas Neshama means any chai. At the most basic definition, chai is someone that was born from a mother and a father. So, and Rav Kapach says, therefore, since we, according to our knowledge now, spontaneous generation is not true, therefore you shouldn't kill anything. You know, so, now again, this of course leads into questions I'll get to about, you know, infallibility of Chazal and things like that. But let me at least show there's a problem. These are not Devarim. These are not Devarim Kalim. All right, I was not going to bring in much later, but I'll just anticipate. Yes, it is possible to create such an idea, which I've heard from many, you know, big Talmid Chachamim, that you could say, well, when the Gemara says you're not allowed to kill, it means it's only the Rama of Chi, you know, it's only that level of life, which is, you know, like behemoth and chayes and things like that. But you know that you have to decide whether that is really what the Gemara meant. Okay. So I've heard what you said. And but just know that, you know, you have to decide whether that is really Pshat in the Gemara. Maybe it's not. And then, but the point, but I think everyone should come away that these things are not easy. You just like, you know, snap them away in one second. Anyway, let's now move. This is a very interesting book, all you should know. It's a good book. Get a lot of interesting bakiyas without doing 300 hours of research. It's called The Dictionary, The History of Ideas. So it's not even that expensive. I bought the whole set. And, you know, they have fun, you read it, whatever. They have out for Shabbos, not doing anything, so you could get a lot of ideas. So they have a whole essay here on spontaneous generation. So let's read a little bit. So one of the, in the 17th century, you had William Harvey, who had, he already started to say this whole thing's not true. Now, before that, by the way, let me just tell you that among the Christian thinkers, the medieval period, St. Augustine was a very strong proponent of spontaneous generation, and thereby he answered another theological question. The question is like this. You have a Teva, and you have Noah, and Lefi Pshuto, right, he took all the creatures into the ark. All the creatures into the ark, whatever, Shloshim HaMacham, Shim HaMa, whatever it is, how are you going to fit everyone in? And then how are you going to fit all the millions of different types of fleas and lice and everything? So what's the answer, Augustine said? Spontaneous generation. God didn't need to tell Noah to put all these tiny creatures into the Teva. Okay, so in other words, believe in spontaneous generation, just like we saw from Tosfos Yontif, you know, to help fortify Yesh Me'ayin, it was used, that's like the previous page, actually was used to help certain other shitos. Like it says as follows, he sought to render more credible the story of Noah's ark by pointing out that it had been unnecessary to include among the species assembled therein very minute creatures, not only such as mice and lizards, but also locusts, beetles, flies, fleas, and so forth, because in order to perpetuate all forms of life after the flood, there was no need for these creatures being in the ark, which were born without the union of the sexes of inanimate things or from their corruption. In other words, in the Teva, you only had those minim, say in the Lamish way, which, in which the klal of spontaneous generation was nisvit. Yeah.
As far as that question was concerned, so couldn't one just say that there weren't as many species at that time and because of breeding or...
So, well, that's going to... That's, I mean, there was... Put it this way, even assuming he doesn't assume that. There's so many, I mean, even Augustine, just to see in North Africa and in... See, there's one move that... I mean, the issue of the Teva is a great topic. There's another discussion. Maybe there was another nais involved called the miniaturization of all the animals. If you'd assume that, you know, then, but what can I say? If, you know, if you want to go that way, fine. But if you don't want to go that way with the miniaturization of the animals, right, then you're going to have a...
Okay, right.
The Ramban says that it was a special nais that the Teva was able to be Bechol.
Right, so the question, what is, one second, what does that mean? In other words, whenever you have a stage nais, let's say like, either you go one of two ways. Either you, for example, I'll what? The Aron, right. So Mishtachavim, Omnitzvuchim, Mishtachavim, Rebachim. So there's a Machlokas Rambam, another Mepharshim, how to understand that. The Rambam says there was no miracle in space at all. You look at Rambam in Pesach Mishnayos and Avos, he says the miracle was in human nature. You go on a bus in Israel, and you know how people act. The miracle here was that everyone was so awed by the Makom HaBeis HaMikdash that they were very careful not to, you know, elbow anyone else. Read the Rambam, Pesach Mishnayos and Avos. So going to the Rambam was not a violation of nature. Rather, again, it was a nace. It's, I think, a very beautiful idea in terms of the hakara and the kavana of being close to Kadosh Baruch Hu that all the Jews were. Having said that, Rashi and a whole host of other mafarshim do not say that. So again, so what does that mean? Omdim svufim shachim revachim. Does it mean that the Beis Mikdash magically grew? Does it mean, on the contrary, that it magically, again, the people magically got small? You just have to work out something.
You can work with black holes and things like that. You can do it. Okay.
So then again, we have to make another discussion. What you know? Do you believe that is really entailed? Okay. So that's the debate. The Rambam says. Again, don't stop there. Rashi in Sefer Yehoshua quotes the Medrash that says all 600,000 people went between Badei Ha'aron. I once got into arguing with someone. I said, the Rambam doesn't believe that, and he was ready to kill me. What?
The Radak argument.
Okay, right. I'm saying the Radak. I'm just using the Rambam, because the Rambam has, because that Rashi is based upon using the, and he was right. That Rashi is based upon the principle of Omdim Tzvuchim Shachim Ravachim, meaning in a very technical, like a space nace, and then applying it, vice and vice, it's all based upon the Medrash. The Rambam, however, doesn't go that way. Okay, let's now, this is an interesting sidebar, let's move back here. Let's now read about Francesco Redi. Okay, right, so page 16 of Arama Komos, we'll do a little bit here. So Harvey already says, nothing can come without from an egg. So Redi is the earliest known attempt to subject the idea of spontaneous generation to empirical critique. His experiments of elusive simplicity were concentrated on the case of the fly, an insect almost unanimously held to spring from corruption. He showed that whenever a sample of organic matter, such as meat, was protected from its surroundings by a gauze cloth, it failed to produce the familiar maggots, regardless how rotten it became. Okay, so Redi perceived that under these circumstances, flies left their eggs on the gauze covering, and he inferred correctly that the maggots, which ordinarily appear in putrescent substances, are nothing but the larvae of flies hatched from eggs deposited by their parents. Okay, and in other words, whenever you get a controlled experiment, you can never, ever, ever demonstrate a case of spontaneous generation. Now, let's grant for the premise that we do not believe in spontaneous generation. So now we have to figure out, how do you deal with the sources that accept it? Now, let's go a step further. And I assume we're all coming from the perspective of from Jews who believe in Torah Misinai, who believe in the Masorah, Torah Shebichtav, Torah Shebaal Peh. Okay, but what about something like this? Well, this raises the broader questions of, let's say, pronouncements of Chazal with respect to medicine. Do you believe that all the cures mentioned in the Gemara are applicable today? Right? I don't think so. So this already was discussed by the Gaonim. So you look here, page 17, I have a from Tshuvas HaGaonim. Just read through the shit, right? If you learn of Misha Aksu Kudaikos, all these cures quoted in the Gemara, again, we believe now antibiotics and germs and things like that. Udashaltun Lamechtav Lachon Hani Asuta Misha Sukudaikos mean Rabbi Shmuel, Hech Kiblu, Pershu, etc., etc. So it says, look, Tzrich and Anul Meimar, Lachon, I have to tell you, Zerabonon Lav Asuta Inun. Chazal were not doctors. Now again, that's be very, very careful. Chazal is still Chazal, and we accept their Mesorah. But when they make a pronouncement with respect to medicine, Umilin ba'alma v'chazinon bizmanehon, right? They basically transmitted the accepted wisdom of their day. Kechad chatzira amunon, right? Like any person. V'lav divrei mitzvah inun. I think it's in the mitzvah like in the sense of like Mesorah. Hilkach, if it's not healthy, lo tizbuchun al olin asuta. Here, I'll give an example. The Rambam, right? Even the Rambam himself. Thing in Rav Shelat. This is how Shelat has Tshuvas HaRambam, and this is his Nihugim. He says before we go to sleep, he has six egg yolks. So I think today we would say for cholesterol, that wouldn't be so great. You know, so again, every door has their standards of what is the best behavior to ensure and improve health. And that's okay. So don't be so mech on what the Gemara says. Don't do anything. That's like meaty. Ela basa the mivdak the yada the vadai machmas rofim bekiim. Domil so low mikole lekad leis did not shave leis sakana. Okay, then he goes on. Now, that's medicine. What about astronomy? Now,
Is
that
Chazal medicine was
the
university of Kippur Rishonim?
With this
going in? Yeah, this idea that Chazal was
the
Kippur medicine.
Okay, that's a great question. Broadly speaking, in Spain, the idea that going in was accepted in throughout Spain, throughout large areas of some in the Maimonideans, as we'll see, the Rambam certainly accepted that idea. The Rishonim Provence certainly accepted that. I think it's fair to say that Rishonim in Ashkenaz and Tsarfas had a more literalist view, and they might well have said, "No, what Chazal said is right. You know, we're not roi l'kach. You know, we'll give other, not even the Shtanu Hatzvoyim. Maybe either you know does work." We're not right to accept that medicine, or maybe nature changed. Right. In other words, the general assumption in Rishonim and Ashkenaz and Northern France would be a literal acceptance of this.
That was
the first character of Nishanu. Okay. So, Nishanu's form is generally used as a. It's like a last resort. No, but you see, Nishtanu HaTzvoyim itself comes from a desire to say what Chazal said is absolutely true. And at the time, it was like eternally true. Right? You know, the Rambam doesn't, he's going on not saying Nishtanu HaTzvoyim. I will tell you that there is another explanation of Nishtanu HaTzvoyim, which is a more like a rationalistic way. The standard way of Nishtanu HaTzvoyim just means something changed. So, he can speak for himself, but I think Rabbi Tendler, as far as I understand, interpreted a tshuva of Moshe about trefos. Right, the Gemara says certain behemos are, have certain diseases which are making treif. So, obviously, Rav Moshe makes a chilek between the trefos of behemos and the treif of bnei adam. He says, treif of behemoth, those things which make you treif, that's a halacha, and that's forever, even if today it would not necessarily make the behemoth die. Right? But by adam, it just depends upon you know what is a sickness, what is not considered a sickness. So then Rav Moshe writes there, it's in Chosh Mishpah Chelik Beis, Nishtanu HaTzvayim. In other words, why should it be that something which, according to Chazal, would make you a trefa, which means you will die within 12 months, and today it is not, so we say Nishtanu HaTzvoyim. So the classic definition of Nishtanu HaTzvoyim means something magically changed. I think Rabbi Tendler, this actually was also a part of the whole Slifkin controversy, because Rabbi Slifkin quoted Rabbi Tendler. He said that Nishtanu HaTzvoyim might mean our understanding of what nature is changed. But that has wide ramifications. That, by the way, is certainly not the way the Bali Tosfos understood it. Bali Tosfos says, Shonas Vayim, something changed. Here, it's a little more sophisticated, our understanding of what the nature has changed. But that, one second. But this is really going too far afield. Let me just say that that's the one area that Slifkin said, you know, maybe my opponents are correct and I'm wrong. Maybe Rav Moshe, when he said Nishtanu HaTzvayim, really meant the strict definition of Nishtanu HaTzvayim. You know, so. But in any event, the Gaonic way of understanding it from the Gaonim and certainly from the Rambam, and we'll see momentarily Rav Avraham ben Rambam, is to say that, you know, when Chazal spoke in scientific matters, they weren't speaking as, you know, the Bali Masorah, Moshe Gibber Torah Mesinam, so Yeshua, Shulis Kenes, Kenes, Avinu, Vigan, Shekines, Tagadola, etc., etc. They were speaking as wise, learned men of their time who knew the best science of their time. Yeah?
This is, we're referring to Tanai or Amir?
That's an interesting question. No, even Tanai. Even if you'd have medicine of, theoretically, of Tanai.
The
Chatzar Kavod, for example, the Mishnah Yuma discusses Tanoim about feeding for, you know, for Kelev Shota, things like that.
But no, but the Tanoim would seem a bigger problem. The Amoraim seems very clear to make assumptions in terms of halacha with regard to various interpretations of Mishnahs. Rabbi pointed out that all over Chulin you have Machlokas over interpretation of the Mishnah, which is clearly not necessary. It's clearly just Machlokas over the interpretation of the Mishnah, and so where's the Masara? Okay, we don't have it, whatever. They didn't have it. They were trying to interpret the Mishnah. The Mishnah was the Masara, and they were trying to interpret it. So why, where's the assumption?
Well,
why would one assume that the Amoraim have the Masara with regard to medicine if they don't have it by halacha and everything?
Okay, that's an interesting question. You're asking you're going in two different directions simultaneously. So I will, in fact, your two things say will contradict each other. Because on the one hand, I will tell you that there are many pronouncements in the Gemara about medicine that are not part of the base. So even if you say that when Amoraim are disputing each other, well, you know, they just lost Masorah and they're just trying to figure out which one is correct, but there are other statements which are like apodictic statements that are saying, you know, X, Y, Z, the cure for this is that. So
they think
it's terrible. Okay, no, I understand, but one could theoretically take the assumption that when it's just a statement, I'm going to say X, Y, and Z, that's it. That is the statement that the Gaonim are fighting. That's the statement of that's the position of the Mashe. Okay. Then there's another question, which is if you could push it back, statements of Amorayim with respect to medicine and statements of Tanoim with respect to medicine. So then again, you'll have to then make a determination. I'll give one example. The last Mishnah in Sukkah, right? So there's the they said if it rains on Sukkot, so it's like the Eved gives the rabbi a coat and then he spills in his face, questions whose face is getting spilled, and then the Gemara goes there. Again, this is from Tanoim, discuss the whole issue of an eclipse. That an eclipse of the moon is bad for the Jews, and the eclipse of the sun is bad for the non-Jews. So the Rambam never, and that's from Tanoim, the Rambam never quotes that. Now, of course, we understand why the Rambam does not quote that, because apparently, again, as much as we can make, you know, definitive conclusions, it seems that the Rambam just did not buy any conclusions about eclipses either way. Right? So, okay, but there, if you look carefully, that's why I think it's not so easy to make a distinction Amoraim and Tanoim, because the Rambam will do what he does, even with respect to Tanoim. Anyway, speaking of the Rambam, let's now go to page 18, and let's talk about astronomy. This will lead us to the Copernican Revolution. Do not ask of me to show that everything they have said concerning astronomical math conforms to the way things really are. For at that time, mathematics were imperfect. That's Chazal. So again, the Gemara, you know, square root of 2, right? 1.41414, according to Gemara Sukkah? No, just 1.4, period. So it's more than that. So again, you could say they were rounding it off, but the Rambam says Lamaisa, the Rambam has no problem interpreting Gemara's Kipshutam and saying, okay, so they weren't perfect. They did not speak about this as transmitters of dicta to prophets, but rather because in those times they were men of knowledge in these fields, or because they had heard these dicta from the men of knowledge who had lived in these times. So Chazal is very, very wise people, besides being Baalei Mesorah, but they knew the best of science at their time. So because of this, now, this goes back to he's saying. Now, the Rambam said that we do have a presumption if you can try to fit the words of Chazal that they are saying what is scientifically true, we will do so. I will not say with regard to things there, which, as we find in correspondence, is true that they are incorrect, rather than said fortuitously. For whenever it is possible to interpret the words of an individual in such a manner that they conform to being consistent that has been demonstrated, this is the kind of most fitting, most suitable, an excellent man of excellent nature. Now we go to the Avram's son, the Rambam's son, Avram ben Arambam. Now, the famous one in Pesachim, Tzadik Dalet on the base. Let me just set this up first. The Gemara talks about Galgal Kavua and Madolos Chozrim, or Mazal Kavua Galgal Mechozrim. Right? This has to do with the assumption that, according to Ptolemy, the earth was the center of the universe, and everything, including the sun, was revolving around the earth. Now, and again, there was no such thing as space. There was just galgalim, which were like these like shells that the planets were hooked onto. So it's a question whether the shells moved, and so really the planets don't move. Planets just hooked onto the shells, and they move around the earth, or no, the shells are stationary, and the planets move around. It's T.S. Kuhn, you know, Copernican Revolution and Structural Scientific Revolution discusses how that was finally demolished by Copernicus. Now, then they go into another thing, Sachem Tzadik Dalet, about the Shemesh. One Mandomer says that by day it's l'malo min arakia, and by night it's mitachas l'karka. That's Chachmei Umas Olam.
Right.
So Rashi refers to that Gemara, right? Right. The other Mandamar says that Chachmei Yisrael say by day the Shemesh is a Mal Min Ha. I'm sorry. Start again. Chachmei Muslim say by day the Shemesh is a Mata Min Rakia, and at night it's a Mata Min Karka. That sounds like Ptolemy, right? In the morning, it's on top of us, and in the night, it's below us. That means the universe, the earth is the sphere, the center of the universe. Now, Chachmei Eretz Yisrael, or say something which we don't even understand what it's saying, says in the morning that true, the Shemesh is Metachas L'Rakia, but at night, the Shemesh is L'Mala Min Arakia. Whatever that means, right. That sounds pre-Ptolemaic. Doesn't even sound Ptolemaic. In other words, the assumption of Ptolemy is, the breakthrough is, that all the bodies in the universe are spheres, and one is going around the other. In other words, pre-Ptolemaic, they didn't accept this. Ptolemy is a chiddush. Ptolemy is saying that, you know, there is another side of the world, you know, you go around the world, you see China being the bottom, and they're not falling off, because the earth is a sphere, and we're the center. So from the perspective of any person on this globe, we are the center, and the sun goes to the other side at night. Now, what? No, absolutely not. He understood the earth was a sphere. Yeah, 100%. It's not just round. It's a sphere. It's a three. It's a three-dimensional globe. All educated Greeks already knew that the earth is a sphere. When I was in ninth grade MTA, I had a teacher, Mr. Ehrenstein. So then he left us a couple of months. But remember, at one point, he was doing earth science. So he said that, listen, the idea that everyone before Columbus thought that the earth was flat is a bubble myself. Educated people that knew Aristotelian physics and the Dark Ages still had some educated people, and there was transmission of learning through universities, not universities, or monasteries. Well, educated people knew that the earth was a sphere. So Ptolemy is in advance, but Amoratzin thought the earth was mamish flat. Ptolemy, in his whole conception of the universe, is in advance. Because it says, Taka, you know, the Earth is a sphere, and things are, everything's going around the Earth. Now, let's bring it back here. Now, the Gemara in Sachin says that the Chachmei Yisrael admitted that the Chachmei Umas HaOlam that say that in the morning the Shemesh Mitachas L'Rakia and at night Mitachas L'Karka are right. Now, that is because, as they're saying basically, Ptolemaic astronomy is right as opposed to pre-Ptolemaic astronomy. That's the Pasuk side of the Gemara. And there was a famous Italian astronomer named Schiaparelli. He was the one that he talked about these channels on Mars, and they mistranslated and thought it was canals, and started the whole science fiction industry about these little people on Mars digging these canals to get the water. Anyway, so Schiaparelli was the one, he discussed this, we discussed everything, all ancient literature on astronomy. He says that the Pasuk Shana Gemara is the machlokas between Ptolemaic astronomy and pre-Ptolemaic astronomy. So you're a Rambam, the scientific shita, the one that's more in line with science of your day, is Ptolemy. So what does this show? This show that Chazal knew that when they thought their idea of pre-Ptolemaic astronomy, that the sun just goes outside somewhere at night, is wrong, and that the Umas HaOlam right shows that Chazal were unafraid to accept results of science. In fact, right, so he's, you know, again, so he discusses this. Let's read a little bit. In fact, the Rambam says the idea that you shouldn't just give in to someone just because they say, oh, well, you know, it says so in the Gemara somewhere, it says, Amar Shem Yisparach, lo tisa p'nei dal, lo seda p'nei gadol, lo sedek tishbo, which means you have to try to find the truth. Lo sakiru panim b'mishpat, ve'ein hefresh ben kabolos oso dafa mino b'lo raya, obein shenamim lo omra misa lo panim nitan lo, ki ha emes ito b'li safek, neshu adam gadol. No, don't say that. Don't say, oh, because he's a great man, therefore he must be true. No, that's not the way to do it. And he says that's usur. She calls the Eno Raya Aval Asufi Akdama Zulun Schaim Negoto Malcham Yetam Tchunasam, the Shlemus Tchunasam the Perish HaTorah. Just because Chazal are the authorities in Perish HaTorah, the Tiktukeha, Yoshim Reim, the Beer Klole Protea, Shanita Lehem, the Namim, the Dait Maholim Reim, the Rafuos. Just because they are Chazal, that doesn't mean we agree with them in medicine. Bachachmos HaTeva. Right, that's nature, that's tuna. Right, Lahamin also Kashanamas of Perish HaTorah, Shetach Chachmasa, B'yadam. Oh, this is interesting. In other words, you know, there's no Dat Torah on science. We accept the authority in Chazal as to Perish HaTorah. Ulehem, Dimsu LaRos of Lei Adam. Look at this drasha. Kinen Shenemar, Al Pi HaTorah Sher Yerucha. Unbelievable. The one pasuk which seems to say, you know, you always do everything the Chazal say, but what's the drasha? It says Al Pi HaTorah, not Al Pi HaRefuah. Okay. Then he goes into Shmona Shratzim. We'll skip all that. Okay, we have a lot to go here. Okay, I'll take questions. I see, by the way, you know, I see already, we're not going to make it by 2:30. So is the chance we do a second class? I don't know what you want to
do. We'll keep on going until 2:40 and then we'll
stop. Okay, so I'll take questions, yeah.
We in the end accept certain scientific understandings of Chazal, especially with the universal calendar, that have proven to be correct.
Okay, that's
so
great.
So we'll hold by them.
Okay, right. Well, the question about thinking about Molad Zakein, what are you referring to?
I mean, Molad Zakein is one example, but also I mean, issues in calculating cycle, I mean, our, you know, Tehtal and Tadabracha calculations are all off, and they keep on moving around, because we know they're incorrect.
Right.
Because we're out of our Hava.
Yeah, right. So there already it's like almost, you know, the famous Tshuva Sarash, when she tried to change things, and he said Talmud's B'chlal, saying Talmud should go on the country you are. You know, why are we talking about Eretz Yisrael the whole time? So it's slowly. So St. Paul and Mutter had its own problem, so to speak. Right. No, that's a famous question by Skufa. Really, we should, you know, when he had to change from the Julian calendar to the Gregorian calendar, because that Chesh was still going to the Julian calendar. So that's why, really, we should start saying approximately November 22nd, St. Palamata, approximately 60 days.
Our calendar is better, but it's still not perfect.
That is true also. That is true also.
We know how to calculate it correctly.
Yeah, okay.
So how come we don't change what?
Okay, right. So that's a fantastic question. Let's put it this way. The issue of St. Palamata, you know, it's an easier problem, because if you really need rain, I think they always add in Shmackel. In other words, say there are other issues which are more pressing in Talmud. If you really need rain, it's a drought. You can say St. Talmudar in July. You know, if you really need rain, the rush already. The same is true with the rush. Said, you know, that's one thing you want to do to change the laws about. We should say Talmudar when we need to, and no one will listen to me, they want to go on, so don't listen to me. So that's a long thing. In terms of Kiddush HaChodesh, that's just an article recently in Tradition about that whole topic, about Molad Zaken. See, what's happening is, the Molad is 29 days, 12 hours, 793 Chalakim. I think it's a drop ahead of what it should be. Right. So in other words, we're getting Molad Zaken when it really would not necessarily be had we sliced off a half second or whatever it was. Right. But again, so there, the Maisa, like this year, like last year. Right. Let me just get some of the other questions up to speed on that. Rosh Hashanah says Lo Adu Rosh. Aleph, Dalet, Vav, you cannot have Rosh Hashanah. Now, as we know, so therefore, if the Molad, for example, is Tuesday night, you will push off Rosh Hashanah until Thursday. It can't be on Wednesday. So, all these calculations are based upon an approximation of the Molad. Now, I think there have been four times in the 20... Molad Zaken means when the Molad will be after 12 p.m. on Tuesday. In other words, we can't have the Molad, if we have the Molad less than 6 hours before the onset of Wednesday, we will push off Rosh Hashanah until Thursday. Now, this was a very rare occurrence. Now, look, that's pretty darn good, what Chazal have, 29 days, 12 hours, 793 Chalakim. They now know, NASA, their computations we're like maybe a fraction of a second off. Okay, but a fraction of a second adds up during the year. So we have our own system of 7 leap years every 19 years to rectify it, but apparently, by now, by the 20th century, there's a greater preponderance of what's called Molad Zaken, which might not have happened had we been more exact in the Kiddush HaChodesh. I'm sorry, in the calculation exactly how much a Chodesh is, but again, it's only 4 years out of 100, and okay, so you know, that's like the system there. In other words, nobody, and I will tell you, in Kiddush HaChodesh, we have the rule, Atem, Afilu Mezidim, Afilu Shogim, Afilu Mutayim, that, you know, Kafi Chazal. Now, I'm not minimizing the conflict here. By the way, the recent article showed, you know, in the 9th century, there was a fierce debate between Rav Sadia Gaon and his opponents as to what day Yom Kippur was. So someone just said, you know, so all these, you know, the historians that never think anyone is ever Lishma. It says everyone's always like a power struggle. So they say, aha, what's going on here? It was a power struggle between Rav Sadia Gaon, who's trying to assert the Babylonian supremacy against the other parties who are trying to assert the Israeli supremacy. You know, no, but maybe there was a Molad Zaken problem, you know, which is something which appeals to me that maybe they actually were fighting over, you know, some halacha aspect. So the point is, that Lamaisa decided to go and won the day there. So Lamaisa, we we follow the rules. Again, there's not going to be a major catastrophe. We're not going to end up having Pesach in the fall. But you are right that it is, there's a slight discrepancy. There was an article in Tradition, I forget the author's name, just a couple issues ago that actually discussed this issue of Molad Zaken. By the way, just to sneak this point right in now, in other words, the Babylonians also had a very, very complicated system of leap years, metonic cycles, and we're not, this is also known as part of Chochmas Umas HaOlam, that you'd have seven leap years every 19 years, then you conclude with a equation between the lunar year and the solar year. Okay, but your points are very, very, very well taken. All right, let's try to move a little faster here. So I'll just tell you outside. Dr. Schneer Lyman wrote an article in which he pointed out that, then we saw the Tiferet Yisrael who quotes some named Link, page 26 of Ayin Makomos, Heinrich Friedrich Link. So it's on the contrary, that book is not a proof of spontaneous generation. No, his book was, like you have someone writes a book on ancient Greek mythology. His group was the primeval world and antiquity. So Fakert, he wasn't saying, I believe it's true. He was simply, reporting the ancient Egyptian beliefs. He wasn't proving that they are true. Right? So Tiferet Yisrael, Kvodo b'mkoma munach, it's not really clear that that's a proof of a spontaneous generation. Doug Lyman has a funny line here. This, no one was able to find this book. Even Shaul Lieberman and his Hellman from Jewish Palestine just couldn't find the book. Doug Lyman found the book. So he says he restored the missing link. Okay. Now let's finally go to the Pachad Yitzchak. Who is the Pachad Yitzchak? Pachad Yitzchak was a of Isaac Lampronti. His dates are 1679 to 1756. So he lived already after Francesco Redi showed there's no such thing as spontaneous generation. And in Italy, you had a lot of Rabbanim who also trained as physicians, had gone to medical schools, and they knew a lot of science. In fact, what did Lampronti do? He wrote his encyclopedia called Pachad Yitzchak. That's a very university-type thing. That was like the first Jewish encyclopedia. He got topics, and he had his Talmidim, and he helped. And that's also something new. He got his research assistants to do some of the work. So, in fact, you read. I have posted that song. It's a very good article by a man named David Ruderman. He's one of the world's experts, really, on Jewish attitude toward science in the early modern period. So he discusses this thing. Now, anyway, so remember, basically the question is as follows. Once we now know that spontaneous generation, according to scientific evidence, is not true, how could we be makil to kill these little maggots, little flies on Shabbos? It should be usher. So he wrote a letter to another Italian Rav saying, Taka, based upon the latest scientific evidence, we should be machmir. But the Rav wrote back saying, Okay, very, very, he was surprised. So let's look at a little bit, at least, of the Pachad Yitzchak. Okay, so there are two pages here, the Pachad Yitzchak. Let's look at the second page, page 29. So first he wanted to say that his hakdash should be usur. Let's look at the fifth line from the top. Vani hatsor hakosei, ilav nistafina. So this you should know, you know, when you're learning, learn you know, Pnei Yeshua. When he says ilav nistafina, get ready. Big chiddush. We're knocking out, everyone else is coming. Ilav nistafina amina, the bizmanenu, shachachme hatoldos. That was the word for biologists. Right? Like Leeuwenhoek, a little microscope. They're learning how different organisms propagate. He bitu v'ro v'yoda v'kosu. The kol bal chai yichye nimi sheye hava min ha-beitzim. Now, what does this remind you of? It's exactly the phrase that William Harvey, when he said "Omni vivum ex ovo," right? You see it. Now, it's not saying that it's almost like translate from the Latin. Kol bal chai yichye oyeh mi sheye hava min ha-beitzim. Kol ze hochichu b'rayos b'ro. Im kein. Shomer nafsho yichok mehem lo yarog lo parosh lo kina va'al yachniz atzno v'safek chiyochatos. So in other words, not that scientific evidence is making you a cow. Scientific evidence makes you being more machmir hilchos Shabbos.
This is a suffix.
Yeah, let's put it this way. Yeah, right. And I think he clearly understood that it's you know, totally wrong. With the vara ze amina, dim yishmu chachmi yisrael rayos umos olam yachshiv yodel devein kol gagal chosam mazal kavua. Okay, but then he says, what can I do? I asked one of the other rabbein from Mantova, the kiem haheter. So we, you know, we'll read this and we'll get both sides of the debate. Then we'll see that not much has changed. Adiyom Hazeh. Shavuos Hazeh, so Shalzim Be'ez Hazeh, Shemol Aretz Das HaChokim HaTzkonim B'Dvarim HaOmrim Ki Kol Bal Chai Nolol Masava Mibetza Muta Alaru Kino B'Shabbos V'Ashivosi She'ein L'Shanos Adinim HaMiyusad HaKabolos Karvonenim B'Shvil Chakiris Chachmi Umas Ola. Okay, this again is like, yeah, like the view of maybe some of the Chachme, let's say Rav Moshe Taku, who was a German Jew living time that we showed him, who was, he's Haklub Sadigon. He says, no, you have to take everything that the Gemara says literally. You have to take all the psukim about God literally. So he says here also, don't change dinim because of their science. Halo tire, proof, shar bei min achokim achishim v'rayos dova ayin hora. Right? What do the scientists know? They don't believe in ayin hara. V'ramban zal kosav shadai listo divrem mashkos v'gorlinim dina osu lamno stei chaver v'shoshem hizkin komosa. You shouldn't, like, when your friend has a big field, he is outstanding in his field and he is, gathering all the grain, you know, you look at it, you're jealous, you know, you're making like an ayin hara. So that shows the Gemara did believe in ayin hara. Vein tzorech L'ma'amin l'vakesh m'mokam achir rais v'tainos afal pishe yeshon rabos v'atzumos ki sasi kabolos raboseinu shal adnei hadover zeh dvir v'yosru v'din mishpot gomor v'ad edos nemona etzli. Oh, I'm sorry. Now we have another proof. Because the Gomash Kosu is going to write a psoch v'in imagadol kabul mazul chozer. Now it says shal chozru chachme yisro bosa zvam v'odol chachme umos ola. Now Rav Bril, who was the person arguing with Lampronti, he has an or Briel, and I pronounce it, Rav Yehuda Briel. Rav Yehuda Briel has a chap here. What happened to that Gemara after the Copernican Revolution? Right? Because after the Copernican Revolution, it's not true that in the Boker, the Shemesh is Lamata Mirakia, and the Laila is Mitachas Lakarka, because the Earth is going around the Sun. Now, it has never been satisfactory explained to me how you're going to somehow push the Copernican view into what the Chachmei Yisrael are saying. So let's leave that. I can't, but I do know, apparently, that there's evidence that one of the early post-Copernican astronomers named Tycho Brahe B-R-A-H-E, he did a lot of work with, first of all, he had an observatory. Then he did minute observations of all the planets. He also demolished one of the principles of Ptolemaic astronomy, which was the indestructibility of the heavens. In other words, the assumption is that, again, everything's going around the Earth. It's like shells. Therefore, for example, a comet. So Aristotle said you can't explain a comet because nothing can go through. So therefore, Aristotle said comets are all optical illusions. They're really atmospheric phenomena. But Tycho Brahe proved that, no, comets are going from beyond Saturn, and they're going, you know, they're crossing the orbit of Saturn, crossing the orbit of Jupiter, Mars, getting close to Earth, like Halley's Comet, for example. So that also was a demolition of Ptolemy's worldview. So apparently, there is a tradition. Yeah, I'll read here. David Gans, that's Tzemach Tzavit, the author of astronomical text, The Social Tycho Brahe, refers to Brahe's reaction to the rabbinic passage on the spirits and stars. According to Gans, Brahe had insisted that Jewish sages had been wrong to acknowledge the truth of the Ptolemaic position of the Gentile scholars. The truth, the heliocentric one, lay with them. So again, I will just add that it's not, you got to really push it to push Copernicus' system into what Chacham Yisrael is saying. But let's grant that. Okay? Somehow get that shot. So now, Rabbi Yehuda Briel's position against the Lamprati becomes very strong. Because what happens if science today says this? Maybe science tomorrow will say that. Right? Ptolemy was not the last word. Copernicus now is the last word. So maybe on the contrary, maybe Chachmei Yisrael were wrong in giving in to Chachmei Umos Olam. They should stick by their guns. Now, again, it's very hard to believe that he really held a Chachmei Yisrael held a heliocentric universe. That, of course, is certainly not correct. But in any event, Rabbi Yehuda Briel uses this as an argument against Lamprandi. So now today, we say that spontaneous generation is false. Maybe tomorrow, other scientists will prove that it's true.
Doesn't he shoot himself in the foot by criticizing the top
major? Yeah, okay, that's very important. He points that in his response. But by the way, I got this off the net when, in the whole Slippery controversy, believe it or not, someone wrote a paper called Maimon Mavol HaShemesh. This was printed a few years ago, in which he says that, by the way, it's Kabbalah's Chazal, that Copernicus is wrong, and that Ptolemy is right. Bahariah, the Rambam, says so. Bahariah, Reb Chaim Vital, who lived after Copernicus, said so. Bahariah, the Or HaChaim, who lived after Copernicus, said so. So how could Copernicus compete with Reb Chaim Vital, Kadosh? How could he compete with the Or HaChaim? Now, the answer, of course, as David Ruderman said, is Faket. All this demonstrates the slowness of the reception of the Copernican theory into Jewish circles, either in Tzfas or in, really, both in Eretz Yisrael. Or Chaim Kadosh was from Morocco, came to Eretz Yisrael. It's really the other way around. But in any event, point of the Pachad, the point of Yehuda Briel, I forgot the guy's name. The point of Rabbi Briel has, you know, is a trenchant point that has to be addressed. Namely, that scientific theories change. Now, I mean, the response to that might be, well, no, not all scientific theories change. And, you know, there's a certain notion, like the Rambam says, of progress in science. So, for example, like now, no one's going to go back, for example, to Ptolemy's theory. Let's even take physics. So, you know, you have Aristotle's theory that the natural state of heavy bodies is at rest. That's why Aristotle had Taka such a problem. Why are all the planets moving around the Earth? They should just fall down. Right? So Aristotle finally came up with the idea that the planets really are made of a fifth type of matter. Right? He didn't have elements. He had fire, air, earth, and water. And the planets are made out of the fifth element called the quintessence. That's where that word comes from. So it's a different din. It's a separate din in the planets. They're made out of the fifth element. That's why they don't fall down. But otherwise, everything should fall down and be at rest. Now, we know Newton, right? We have the idea of what's called inertia. No, it's not true that the natural state of every being is at rest. The natural state of every being is to continue doing what you're doing. Right? So, yes, if you are at rest, your natural state of being is at rest. But if you're in motion, the natural state of being will be continue the motion. And that's exactly what the planets do. Right? So, now, Newton's physics, as we know, certain things don't work at extremely quick distances close to the speed of light. That's where Einstein showed that you have to modify Newtonian physics. But that doesn't mean they go back to Aristotle. Okay? So same thing here also. Just because Ptolemy is wrong, that doesn't mean you go back to pre-Ptolemy. There is an idea. Now, again, science is not perfect. You do the best you can with the tools you have. But there is something called progress. And just because things are disputed doesn't necessarily mean you go all the way back to square one and witch doctors and things like that. Anyway, let me just go on a little bit further. There's one point. Yeah, so you pointed out, didn't he really shoot himself in the foot, as you said. So Rav Lem Pronti, in his answer to him, says, look, but the point is, at the point when Chacham Yisrael were holy, Chacham Umas Olam, his Magal Kavua, Chosev Ahor B'etzer, the last Komiyut Yisrael B'gemor in Piyak Kabbalah Heim. El the Chacham Yisrael, Dibru, Gam Heim Lefamim, Mi Pi HaSeichel, Ve'achakiro HaEnoshis. V'lo Mi Piyak Kabbalah. Dimlapke lomalhem lahodos. Not exactly his point. Hoyulam litzchad v'kabalotzam. Lo lashud nekol reis umos olam. Now look at this. What about Copernicus? So writing in the beginning 18th century, says, by the way, not everyone still holds from Copernicus. By the way, Tycho Brahe himself did not have exactly a heliocentric universe. He had an in-between idea. He said that the planets go around the sun, but the sun itself goes around the Earth. So in an indirect way, everything is still going around the Earth. But in any event, he says, so then he makes a point, this was mentioned by the Rabbah also, that, astronomy is not like math. Math is an exact science. You prove Pythagorean theorem. Adronim enaka chachme limudit, haino mathematics. No. And what about Ayin Hara? He says, well, many scientists believe in Ayin Hara. Okay? But Lemaisa, then he says something. He says, I really don't want to be Makil. I'm just being machmir. That goes back to the previous point about misafek. That's the first two lines. He says, "Ra'isi tzak kotaratzo alakina ma'adi yishav yosh avagad the minyan svar b'chol mokom kol yan ki lahachmir v'lo lahokel anan kaiminan." Wow. In other words, this is his final. He's saying, I am accepting scientific evidence, but even if you are a little uneasy with what I'm doing, let me tell you the following. I'm not doing scientific evidence lahakel. This is a very, very important point. I am doing scientific evidence lahachmir. Now, there are those, adiyom hazeh, that say that, no, you're allowed to, it's not the right to kill Purushan, and you're talking to Rabbanon. if not mutzul gamrei, because it doesn't have that ramal of chiyus. Now that's the only possible counter move at this point. You know, because if you accept no such thing as spontaneous generation, you have to say it doesn't count as a living being. But again, that seems very, you know, arbitrary. When he says only lahachmir, not lahakel, that will allow me to at least make one comment about the whole thing. You know, I don't know how many of you have found this whole affair with Rabbi Nachum Schlifkin, the camel, the hare, the hyrax, and the books were banned, and it's back and forth. So let me just, at what point, let me just read this. He has a whole discussion about the Pachad Yitzchak. I'm glad they knew about this. So he says, look, my view that Chazal rely on the science of the day and could have been an error, which is the fundamental point of dispute between my book, supporters and opponents, is not limited to Rabbeinu Avraham ben Aram and Rav Hirsch, also found in Rambam, Ramban, Ramshik, Rav Lamfronti, and Maharsha. And then he says that. But then one of the attackers of Rav Slifkin said, "Look, all the Pachad Yitzchak was doing is being machmir." So Slifkin says, "Me too." He is not, you know. He has a whole discussion. Just briefly, the Torah says there are four animals that only have one out of the two simonim, right? Kosher animals have split hooves and chew your cuds. He has a whole discussion, you know, what exactly is defined as chewing your cud. Question, for example, let's say, what about the kangaroo, right? So, in other words, in the past, let's say 200 years, people have said a proof of Torah Misinai is that there are only four animals that only have one of the two simonim and no more. Okay, and it's a question that might... Some say there's a Gemara that says that, Slifkin denies that, right? So once you deny that, that's a Gemara, so and you have a different interpretation of Gemara, it boils down to really just what people say now. Like you go to, I don't know, let's say somebody's...
Discovery.
Right, Discovery, they'll say that. So he says it's not true. They'll have that in... he has a discussion about a kangaroo, gets into excruciatingly technical detail. So again, if you like, see, I love like physics, astronomy, that stuff. I'm not so into the zoology and botany. So I went through this, but I didn't enjoy it that much. It's very extremely, like I could read the astronomy stuff for, you know, all night. But at one point he says as follows. The Gemara seems to say that those animals which lack upper teeth are kosher. So if someone says, no, that's not true, because there are some animals that lack upper teeth and are non-kosher. Okay, so the Gemara, you said, didn't know about the kangaroos, the animals in Australia, you know. Oh. So then he just points out that, so he's saying, Chazal, see, you have to add something here. See, from one perspective, Nachum Schlifkin is going much more than the Pachad Yitzchak. Pachad Yitzchak is discussing the Gemara. The Rav Schlifkin really is discussing the point of view of the audience of the Torah. So that's why, in a certain sense, it's much more revolutionary. But, all right, you have the principle, like the Ram says, Dibur Torah B'loshon B'nei Adam, and, for example, Rav Yosef Ibn Katsi says, that means the Torah spoke according to the assumptions of the people who received the Torah. So if the Jews who received the Torah didn't know about Australia, didn't know about South America, so it wasn't discussed. So the Masorah was only about these four animals. Okay, but so now that we know that there is another animal that's lacking upper teeth and not kosher, so if you just have the idea that only four animals like that, you see an animal without upper teeth, you could just eat it right away. But see, you see an animal with upper teeth and it has split hooves, or the other way around. One of the two. You don't have to check for the other two, just eat it. But now that we know it's not true, right, so you would not be able to eat it. So Rav Slifkin says, you know, by the way, what I'm saying is not a kula, it's a chumrah. And in that sense, he's continuing on the Derech of the Pachad Yitzchak. So in other words, just to tie it all together, you know, at the end of the day, even when we say that there's a, you know, we should absorb the new discoveries of modern science into halacha, there does seem to be a difference, again, among the people that accept that view, between going with chumra and going with kula. So that's a very interesting idea. In other words, the Chachid says, be careful not to kill these little fleas on Shabbos, right? And Rav Slipkin says, be careful not to assume just because an animal has no upper teeth, it is kosher. But there, you know, again, because we have our Mesorah, like Rav Moshe said about trefos, we accept trefos, and bring it back to that tshuva, Rav Moshe Feinstein, we accept our psak, that certain animals are treif, meaning they you cannot eat them, right? Be the reason what they may. Even though according to our science, they might not be considered treif, an animal with a, let's say, broken arkuva, you know, could still live more than 12 months, but halacha, the practice of Klai Yisrael, has a continuation and continuity of its own.
Is that the kula or the chumra?
No, that's the chumra.
Could we say that the
chumra? No, that's right. So we don't have. That's what I'm saying. Here, Rav Slipkin said no. It's only chumra. Okay. So harbe yosem mi nashe kotzav kan yesh kan, but we'll end it here. Kill down mincha now. Okay, let's go to that. Okay. That's good, yeah? I think I'm... I 2 hours more. But it's good, right? Okay. Okay, let's go back and just have a minute.